Srimad Bhagavatam.
Canto 8, Chapter 19, The Lord Begs Charity from Bali Maharaj, text number 13. Vairanubandha etavan amritya iha dehinam agyana pravavam ranyor ahamano pabrimhitaha. Vaira anubandha enmity etavan so great amrityo up to the point of death iha in this dehinam a person's too involved in the bodily concept of life Agena Parbhava. Because of the great influence of ignorance. Manyu. Anger. Ahamana. By egotism. Upabrahmita. Expanded. Translation purported by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Hiranyakashipu's anger against Lord Vishnu persisted until his death. Other people in the bodily concept of life maintain anger only because of false ego and the great influence of ignorance. Prabhupada, generally speaking, even though the conditioned soul is angry, his anger is not perpetual but temporary. It is due to the influence of ignorance. Hiranyakashipu, however, maintained his enmity and his anger against Lord Vishnu until the point of death. He never forgot his vengeful attitude towards Vishnu for having killed his brother, Hiranyaksha. Others in the Bali concept of life are angry at their enemies, but not at Lord Vishnu. Hiranyakashipu, however, was everlastingly angry. He was angry not only because of false prestige, but also because of continuous enmity toward Vishnu. According to Bhagavad Gita, anger arises out of frustration, and frustration arises out of unfulfilled desires. And unfulfilled desires arising out of thinking that there's some object in the material world that's going to satisfy us and make us happy. Therefore, everything begins with dhyato, contemplation. So, as mentioned here, most people are not contemplating Vishnu. Matter of fact, even in India, if you go there, people don't really, they may worship Vishnu in some way, like Panchapasana, but they don't really know who Vishnu is. Nor do they really have a desire to think about Vishnu all the time. Therefore, certainly, dhyayato vishyam pumsam, certainly they're not engaged in contemplating Vishnu. Especially in modern society, people can't contemplate anything. Their attention span is so short that if you have a commercial on television, I don't know how long they last, but I think it's only 20 seconds like that at the most. Because otherwise people get bored if it's more than 20 seconds. They can't keep their attention. Similarly, modern movie means it's one flash of a picture, another flash of a picture. In the space of 2 minutes, 30 people have been murdered in different ways just to keep people's attention. Previously in the Indian movies, then it was actually dialogue, meaningful dialogue. People said something that actually meant something. And there was some relationship manifested on the screen. Nowadays, it's, you know, it's more or less, I'm the king here. I'm the king. Let's fight. I'm Tarzan. I'm Big Monkey. That's all people can think about. As a matter of fact, even the famous movies nowadays have people swinging from trees, like that famous Avatar. They're more or less, because that's all people can think about. Of course, there they have something, nice vegetation, forest, probably fresh air, clean water, something unusual, something unique that people only read about in ancient history books when the dinosaurs used to roam the earth. So people can contemplate. Why? Because dhyayato visham pumsam sangas teshu pajayate. Because they don't know what to contemplate on. They're choosing objects. But Krishna says these objects that they're temporary objects that they're contemplating, they can't satisfy one's senses, actually. Yehi samsparshita bhoga dukha yon evate adyantavanta kuntiya nate shu ramate buddha. An intelligent person, he doesn't take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the senses, with their objects. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise person doesn't delight in them. So sure, there's objects to gratify our senses. There's so many objects. The whole society is simply based on creating objects for sense gratification. So many objects. There's some video about how they create all these objects and how they get, they become useless after a few months and they have to be disposed of. So they have whole islands just made of things that people have thrown away. As if Mother Earth is just here so we can create toys and then break them. And then they wonder why there's always difficulty. Because their conception is that this planet is dead, the universe is dead, and soon we'll all be dead. So let's enjoy while we can. Just exploit Mother Earth, exploit each other while we can, and everything will be all right because everything is dead anyhow. Little do they know that there is laws of karma and they're completely controlled by karma. They say everything is an accident. So how is it that when people are bored that they start looking around for something to fill their consciousness with, to fulfill their desire, to get them stimulated, to give them some happiness? So if everything was dead, why is it that the microphone is not looking around for a new occupation? I'm simply standing here repeating, I want to say something. The microphone doesn't say, wait a second, I want to say something myself. I'm tired of just repeating what everyone's telling me. I want to be free. No, the microphone has no consciousness, but we have consciousness, and therefore we look around for objects to satisfy our consciousness. We want our consciousness to be satisfied in some way. And now that we have this body, we are experiencing things generally through this body, and therefore we're looking around, what does my body want? Or who does my body want? But its material nature is just like bubble gum. If you take bubble gum in your mouth, sometimes they have some sweetness in it. They put some sugar in it. The gum itself is not very tasty. So you start chewing the bubble gum, chew, 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 and then you chew out all the sugar, and all you're doing is chewing. So then you spit it out. And then someone else comes along and thinks, oh, free bubble gum. Let me chew it. So this is actually a fact, because people are not so poor nowadays that if you want, very few people, unless they're crazy, if they find bubble gum on the street, will pick it up. chewed bubble gum and chew it again. But in India, they have that. The cows, or they have with these machines where they make sugar cane juice. Have you ever seen that? You know, I mean, they squeeze out everything they can. They go over, they take the sugar cane, they squeeze it through, and then they put the sugar cane back, squeeze it in. I mean, if they could, they'd probably boil down the stalk and cut it up and serve that too. They don't waste things in India nowadays. In any case, but after they squeeze it, they can't get anything else, then they just throw it on the street. And the cows come along, and they pick it up in their mouth, and they go, whoop, and they chew it for some time. And then there's nothing left, and they spit it out. Another cow comes along and says, wow, free sugar cane juice. I remember when I was a boy, my mother cow used to buy me those sugar canes. And so he picks it up and chews it. Nothing there, spits it out. And another cow comes. Ah, free sugar cane juice. And this goes on all day long. That's where this word, punak punas charvita, charvananam, chewing the chewed. It's sugar cane stalk, but there's no sugar left. And therefore it's simply working one's jaws. Nothing, there's no juice. But everyone's looking, where is the juice? And they chew it for some time. That's called dhyayatev vishyampum sangat. We're contacting the senses with our objects, and we start chewing them. And then if it tastes good, then we get another similar object and start chewing on that. And then finally, there's no more sugar, and we get frustrated, and we spit it out. And that's material life. Finding something to chew on, chewing on it for some time, and then spitting it out. That's without any higher consciousness. That means that one is simply in delusion. One doesn't understand actually where things are coming from, how things are, what the laws of nature are. And therefore, one is simply making a mental concoction, a whole drama in which we're the hero or the heroine, and we're the object of everyone's attention, or we would like to be the object of other people's attention, so they can worship what I think is me, this false identity that I have with this body, which I think is me, which I love. My body is my worshipful deity, my worshipful object, and I love it. And I'd like others to actually appreciate it also. I want to give them the gift of worshiping my dead body also. My deity. Spread the glories of my deity around so others can also become worshipers. So this is called delusion. And if there is any memory of any reality of the situation, that I've been trying to be the hero, the heroine in this world since time immemorial, and it's worked out the same way. At the end, when I leave this body, my worshipful body becomes a bunch of bones, and very few people are coming around to worship it after some time. Matter of fact, after some time, when they do some construction work, they're going to dig up my bones and throw them somewhere. My worshipful deity is going to be desecrated. And who knows, as Prabhupada said, we had Napoleon. Napoleon was worshipped by all of France. He said, France is me. But then Napoleon had to leave his body. But still they're worshipping Napoleon, a statue. Every year in Paris there's a big statue of Napoleon, and they come every year to clean off the bird stool before the celebration of his appearance day. Scrape, scrape, scrape. And then they have a ceremony honoring Napoleon, and the next day the birds come back. And who knows, maybe one of those birds is Napoleon, making offerings to his statue. So this is called delusion and forgetfulness, that no one's going to be here forever. We like to forget, because otherwise, if we remembered, then there wouldn't be any fun in the material world. And therefore, because we have no memory, we have no intelligence, we have nothing to assimilate or compare things with. It's just everything is right in front of us, whatever is in front of us. Like an animal doesn't think, well, here's a deer. The tiger is not thinking, well, here's a deer. You know, I read some book, I should have been a vegetarian. Besides that, this deer is, you know, give the poor little deer a chance. I shouldn't be so violent. You know, meat eating is probably not so bad for a tiger, but I should try to, you know, try to find some kind of better, less innocent living entity to harass and kill. Maybe I should find a dead body and eat it. I have to make, you know, etc. No, the tiger doesn't think. He thinks there's something to eat. Let's eat it, for the most part, especially if he's hungry. Now, if you feed the tiger so much that he can't eat anymore, then you can put the tiger, your head in the tiger's house, mouth, because he can't eat anymore. He doesn't think, wow, I'm full, but here's some free food. I think I'll bite his head off too. No, the tiger, when he's full, that's all he wants. He's not interested in more than he requires. But human beings are so foolish that they're hankering for material objects, and they get them, but then they want more and more and more without any limit, greed. And when they can't get more, even beyond what they need, then they become angry and frustrated. But, and therefore, generally speaking, they're just switching from one object to the next, trying out this object, that object. That's why every year they have to come up with something new. And if they can't come up with something new, then they go out of business, because people don't want to buy the same old thing. Because they have no higher experience, they have no higher thing to experience, to meditate on. Now, Hiranyakashipu was quite an unusual personality. He was actually meditating, he was angry at Vishnu. So he was unlimitedly angry. So that's not ordinary. Now, how to explain that? How can someone be unlimitedly angry and be angry? For instance, someone does something bad to us. Yes, we become angry, but how long can you remember it? Has anyone ever been angry at someone for a whole day? Just thinking about them for a whole day, how painful it is. And then try to do that for the rest of your life. Can you do it? After a while, we think, well, maybe I should forgive the person, because I'm the only person who's getting hurt by the anger is me. So how is it that Hiranyakashipu could actually have so much anger? Well, first of all, he was formerly a gatekeeper in Vaikuntha, and this is his first incarnation. And he was specifically empowered to hate Vishnu. He was blessed by Vishnu to hate Vishnu. That was his benediction. That you'll have animosity against me for three lives and then come back to the spiritual world. So he's directly empowered by Krishna to be angry. Otherwise, people ordinarily are not so qualified that you're going to be angry against Vishnu and think about him all the time. We can hardly think about him for 15 seconds. So if we could become angry at him and think about him for a minute or two, we'd make great advancement. Of course, that's unfavorable. Still, it's an extraordinary consciousness to be thinking about Vishnu all the time. Like Kamsa was thinking about Vishnu all the time, about Krishna all the time, because he was afraid that Krishna was going to come and kill him. He knew that in his last lifetime he was Kali Nimi, and Vishnu actually came and killed him. So he's afraid of dying again. Of course, Vasudev, said, why are you afraid of dying? Everyone dies anyhow. Why are you afraid of dying? So he already knew he had died before. He was killed by Vishnu, but now he was afraid he was going to be killed by Vishnu again. So that's called, we lost our intelligence. Why should you be afraid of dying if you already know that you died before? We ourselves, we can't remember our last lifetime. It's not so clear. But he believed that he was Kalanimi in his last lifetime. He was killed by Vishnu. So after the end of this lifetime, he'd still be there. But he had lost his intelligence. And therefore, he had because of anger, his intelligence was uncloudy. Therefore, he maintained animosity against Krishna until the very moment of his death. Of course, he was rewarded for that because obviously, if you can think about Krishna 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, you must be an extraordinary person. So at the time of death, what else are you going to think about? You're going to think about Krishna. Of course, for a demon, they emerge in Brahman generally, but in these cases, especially Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, who do they come back as? Who's the next incarnation, at least in this round? Sound pretty doubtful. You never read the Ramayana? Yes, Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and then who after them? And who else? Dantavakra.
Yes.
Not a well-known demon, Dantavakra. He only gets a page in the Krishna book. I guess he ran out of steam. And then who do they come back as? Who is their next incarnation? Jagai Mata, yes. And then they went back to the spiritual world. So, these are pastimes of Krishna so that we can understand that even the value of meditating on Krishna. That even in animosity, Narada Muni says, one to think about Krishna. Even if we're going to be out of envy, who was out of envy was thinking about Krishna? What was that? Kamsa was fear. Shishupala was envious of Krishna. Why was he envious of Krishna? What was one reason? Who did Krishna take? What did Krishna take from Shishupala that made him very envious? Who was? Yes, Krishna kidnapped Rukmini, who was supposed to be married to Shishupala. So that was the last straw. And out of lust, supposed lust, who was always thinking about Krishna? Ravana? He was lusty after Krishna. The gopis, this Kamapriya, almost like lust. It was actually transcendental lust. And who thought of Krishna out of friendship all the time? The Vrishnis and the Yadus. So Narada Muni says out of lust, out of anger, out of envy, out of friendship, Arjuna also. So somehow or another one should try to always remember Krishna. He actually praises Shishupal and Hiranyakashipu because their emotion was so intense. But of course we don't try to imitate Hiranyakashipu or Shishupal because their meditation was not devotional. Still, they got freed from all material contamination because anything in contact with the fire becomes hot. So anything in contact with Krishna, even out of anger or lust or greed or enviousness, becomes purifying. to some extent, not completely, for the demons, but at least they become purified. It's all, if you can fix your mind on one thing, then everything else will not be disturbing you. Therefore, you're liberated from all other disturbance except for that one thing. And it happens in Vishnu, then, you know, even in the midst of your enviousness or anger, there's going to be some degree of purification. Anyhow, let's meditate on Hiranyakashipu's anger. Better than that of those, meditate on whose anger surpassed Hiranyakashipu. Whose anger should we meditate on? Satyabhama. Well, you're a different rasa. Whose anger surpassed? I mean, Satyabhama is not always angry. What's that? Nrisingadev. Yeah, if you're going to meditate on anger, then meditate on Nrisingadev's anger. Because that's even more powerful than Hiranyakashipu's anger. Hiranyakashipu is compared to, in our song that we sing every day, what is compared to? A wasp. Carefully torn apart by the nails of Lord Nrisingadev. So we should meditate on Lord Nrisingadev out of anger to protect his devotee, tearing apart the wasp-like Hiranyakashipu. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Therefore, Krishna will tear apart the wasp-like material desires that we have in our heart. Yes. Phone. Is it on?
Oh, good. Hare Krishna. Would we be more serious and sober about our spiritual progress if we could remember our past life, like one or two?
Well, if you remember you were a frog in your last lifetime, what would that do to you?
You wouldn't want to go back to that form or something.
I don't know, maybe you were a nice frog.
Who knows, yeah. But.
Maybe you might think that was the life, where there are flies everywhere. And they never bothered me because, you know, and when they came around, I was happy to see them. You know, I lived in a lake, didn't have to pay any, I can go swimming all day long, didn't pay any money, rent was free, plenty of food. I mean, I had a wife frog, you can't believe how pretty she was. You should hear her croak, it was like, wow. You never know, you know, you may think, wow, maybe I should become a frog again.
Yeah, but like some people sexually remember their past life. They're like,
yeah, so you can remember your past life too. Think about what you did yesterday. It was your past life. So what?
Yeah, okay. Thank you. We learn from past mistakes, yeah.
Learn. Well, one thing you learn from the past is that people don't learn from the past. Unless they become Krishna conscious, there's no real learning. I mean, unless they come in contact with Krishna's instructions, there's no learning. How can they learn? They don't. You have to have knowledge to learn. You know, if all they're hearing is ignorance, then what are you going to learn? If you get 100% on your spelling test the second time around, so what? You still don't know what the words really mean. It's all quite superficial, the so-called learning. Anything else?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for lecture, Guru Maharaj. I wanted to ask, I'm not sure if I understand right about forgiving somebody who hurt us. What does it mean to forgive someone? I'm forgetting, forgiving, but I don't want to be in their association anymore. I want to avoid them. Is that okay? Or
I don't know. It depends what they do. They stole a samosa from you. You'll never forgive them. Even in the next lifetime, you're going to hold. Depends what the seriousness of it is. Generally speaking, for the most part, we usually take things way out of proportion to reality. And therefore, the only one who really gets hurt is ourselves. No one understands, you know, why we're so morose sometimes, why we're so depressed. Because we cause it ourselves. We have 100, 1,000 different people we're angry at. We forget why. We just think, I'm just justified. Because, you know, they're bad people and I should be angry. The only way to purify them is through my anger. So we should be conscious of what people did. I mean, if someone does something really dangerous to ourselves, then of course we may try to avoid them. But generally speaking, we should know why we're trying to avoid them, not just out of our feelings.
Let's say envy.
Envy? Oh, that's a great reason to avoid people. Then we shouldn't come before the deities, because people have an atomic fraction of what the Krishna has. If we're envious of this little tiny particle of Krishna, what to speak of the whole? Anything else?
Thank you.
Kwala, Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.